I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, where their Maryland Mortgage Program can help in the purchase of a new home. To honor the Veterans Day holiday in November, active military members and veterans should know about the Maryland Homefront Mortgage Program. Former and current service members who are in the market for a new home can take advantage of a discounted interest rate program, mortgage, and down payment and closing cost assistance. To learn more, you can learn more by visiting mmprogram.org or by calling 800-638-7781 for the Maryland Mortgage Program for our veterans. We see Election Day approaching, and in that we know that one of the major ballot measures is on marriage equality. And over the last couple of years, we've had a lot of discussions and debates around marriage equality. And we thought on this eve we ought to hear from people who are deeply affected by that referendum that we're all going to vote for one way or the other, vote for or against, I should say, to be fair about it, on Tuesday. And we're joined here by several couples who are going to talk to us about their lives, about this marriage equality bill and what it means. We're joined here in studio now, Chanel Batsfield and Nicole Batsfield, who are married in Washington, D.C. this summer and are expecting the first child. Join us in studio, Nicole and Chanel. Welcome. Good to have you with us here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming. And Dr. Jeffrey McClune, Jr. joins us by phone. He's assistant professor at the Department of American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Maryland and a faculty affiliate in lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies programs. And Dr. McCune, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's a pleasure to have you on the air with us. And we are going to be joined in a few minutes by Lisa Polyak and Gita Dean. They were both original plaintiffs in the original civil marriage lawsuit brought in the state of Maryland. Lisa is a supervisory environmental engineer at the U.S. Army Institute of Public Health. And Gita Dean is a college learning specialist at Goucher College. And Gita and Lisa have been together for 30 years and are parents of two daughters. And through the traffic and broken water mains, they are here. So welcome. Good to have you all with us. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com to join in this conversation for the next hour with our five guests. So let's just begin. I really do appreciate you all coming in today. This is the New York Times and other places have written about this ballot measure and the ballot measures in three other states that where both Maryland and Washington and Maine seem to have a chance of passing. And we'll get to the calls in a minute. But first, I want to turn first to Lisa and Gita, who I've known for a while. Thank you for both coming in. It's a pleasure to see you both.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And I want to start with you just because I'd like you to come back to the time when you were part of the original lawsuit filed and talk about that history, when that happened, why you decided to become part of that lawsuit, and consequently became leaders of the struggle for marriage equality in the state of Maryland. At least it looks sideways, but it did do that to you, so.
Well, I mean, we got involved. I mean, the lawsuit was filed in 2003, and we were just, I mean, we were one of nine couples and a widowed man who were the original plaintiffs in the lawsuit. And I mean, the reason we got involved was because at the time we had, our girls were very young. They were 5 and 8 years old, and we were realizing all of the things that we couldn't do for them legally as their parents, things that we would have been able to do if we had been married. And so even though we weren't willing maybe to ask for those protections for ourselves, we were adamant that we wanted them on behalf of our kids. So fast forward more or less to 2007, and the Court of Appeals took up the case, and it was decided against us. And so we were very sad and devastated, actually, by that loss. But the LGBT community of Maryland wasn't willing to let it rest there, and so we then began to asked for legislation to allow same-sex couples to be married in Maryland. And that was thankfully passed this year in the General Assembly. And now here we are yet again trying to keep the law intact at the referendum on November 6th.
And Gita, I know you had not been as much in front of the politics as Lisa, but it's also your struggle as well. And
Well, I think it very much motivated us once we became parents, because we realized all the things, like example, simple example of going to the pediatrician with our first child, who was Lisa's biological child, and being told by the pediatrician that I couldn't bring the baby to the well baby visits. I mean, there were. This is just the. That was just the beginning of realizing.
But you could not bring the child.
Right, because she said to me, this is what the pediatrician said to me at the time, was when she gets her inoculations, if she has an adverse reaction, I'm not family, so I wouldn't be able to consent for whatever treatment she needed. And we were appalled. We were able to sort of, we had been together 15 years when we had our children, so had sort of made this deal like, okay, it's not going to be okay with people that we are, you know, a committed couple. But when it came to our kids, we just weren't able to bridge that and say, it's okay. It's not okay. You know, our children needed protection. And actually, we needed to be able to protect each other, but we didn't take that final step until we became parents. And so I really feel like that was the turning point for us.
The children. And I want to welcome also Chanel and Nicole Bastfield, who did get married in Washington, D.C., right?
Yes.
And you were talking about, before we got on the air, how your marriage, even though it's recognized in Maryland, legally you still can't do things in Maryland, even though you were married in D.C.
That's correct. Like without health insurance, you know, it's on a case-by-case basis, depending on the company that you work for, where some companies like Hopkins may have provisions for same-sex couples to add their partner, whereas other companies might not have it at all. So there are just little loopholes there that we're trying to even out and, you know, make it equal for everyone, just all across the board.
And for you, I mean, it's a factor because you're about to have your first child.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We're expecting our first baby March the 21st. We're expecting our first baby March the 21st. And question six would definitely pave the way to protect our child. And that's why we're here.
Because what Gita described that she faced, you two could face.
Yes.
And your insurance will not cover.
Right.
Your
right,
child.
Right. Now, what we did find out, Maryland recently passed it so that if a lesbian couple is legally married in another state, as long as they're legally married at the time of birth, the other partner's name can be put on the birth certificate. So it no longer says mother and father. It says mother and spouse. But there are still, you know, other things there that we would like to protect against. So we're also looking into the second parent adoption.
And Jeffrey, I appreciate you being part of the show as well. I mean, I know you were also called the last minute, and I appreciate you being able to be part of this. So talk a bit about your own experience in your own life. And I know that you work at this not just as a man involved in your relationship. You also work at it as an intellectual who teaches and works in this stuff in academia.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the things that I've been actually quite active with Governor O'Malley and other clergy, actually, who have been coming at this issue from a whole nother angle. But to talk a little bit about, you know, what introduces me to the topic or what introduced me to the topic would be this whole notion that a majority, right, gets to determine, right, the rights and the opportunities and provisions of a minority, right? I think that we're now in a moment in Maryland where that is actually the case, and that's actually what we were trying to avoid when we first went with the Civil Marriage Protection Act. But for me, what's happening now is we have a little conundrum, right, which is the majority is able to determine the rights of a minority. And I think anytime that happens, we have to have some pause. And so I am a person who believes that we must have as much pause as we have compassion and move beyond the dictates of tradition. And so when I had an opportunity to become involved in not only, challenging the abuse of power that I think sometimes can happen at the hands of the state, I think that when I had an opportunity to be a part of that, I definitely became active because I think that it's unfortunate that families such as the families that we just spoke with have their rights challenged, right? They're citizens of the United States, but they're not able to have access to the things that they should have because they are same-sex couples and because we are in same-sex partnerships. And so I'm really, really clear and passionate about this and feel that we need to really think about this as people who are listening out in the radio world about what it means that as a majority we're able to make a decision for a minority population and decisions that do, in fact, change their lives.
You know, you made me think of something just then, Jeffrey, and I want to throw it out to all five of you. On the one hand, folks who are calling in, Keith and Rosedale, at 410-319-8888. Just want to hear our voices of our panelists for a moment, then we're going to get right to the phone calls and let you join in on this conversation. But I'm just the kind of contradictory emotions and feelings that you all must have. On the one hand, seeing the struggle that I know you've all been through, and I know especially the two of you, Gideon and Lisa, being in the middle of the political struggle, have been involved in fighting for marriage equality, seeing that almost come to a fruition at this point, and being right on this edge here, not knowing whether it's going to pass or not, but that it very possibly could pass in the state of Maryland. On the other hand, it's like what you must consider, thinking what Jeffrey just said about having your lives and your lives and your kind of very ordinariness, if there's such a word, being not decided by you, but by everyone else.
So I just have to reiterate what Jeffrey said. It's never good for any community or country where the minority's rights are decided by a majority. It's never a good thing. We are contributing citizens in this country. We pay taxes. We are good in our community. We take care of our children. We need to have the ability to take care of each other, Lisa and I, and to take care of our kids. And talking about this going up to the voters makes me think about what all of us will suffer, psychic and emotional harm, if question six does not pass. I think about that every day when I drive to work. For the past month, I've been thinking about, you know, am I going to look at my neighbors and think my neighbors decided that my family is not okay, that I'm not a responsible adult? And I've been talking with my children who at the time, you know, when we started in the litigation were 4 and 8 and now are 13 and 16. And they are so excited and they think this will happen. And we finally, last week, we had a discussion with them and, you know, tried to temper their expectations and say, you know, we need to just think about that this may not happen. And I have to tell you, Mark, if this does happen, it's going to be a while for me to wrap my head around it because I feel like with every step that we've moved forward, they found some way to take it away from us. So I'll be waiting for a while for it to sink in and say, okay, so when is the next shoe going to drop on us?
Right.
So that's where I am with this. I'm very cautiously optimistic, but afraid of for the whole gay and lesbian community about what is this going to mean for all of us if it doesn't go our way, you know?
And I think that's very important to realize that it's not just question six. You know, we are your neighbors. We are coworkers. And when you see us in the community, if you didn't know we were gay and lesbian couples, you would know. You know, we are active in the community. You know, Nicole and I are very active in our church. You know, we were blessed to find a church home that welcomed us. We were also blessed to have family and friends that welcomed us. And we just want to put a voice and a face to question six. You're voting for our family. You're not just voting for question six. You're voting to protect Nicole and I. You're voting to protect the child that we're going to bring into this world. And that's what we want people to know.
Jeff, you want to jump in here at all?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think they say it well, exactly, that, you know, our votes matter because they're really determining not just the present, we're determining the future, right? And I think that as folks who are out there who are thinking about their traditions, voting on behalf of their churches. I think that what she just said in terms of we're not voting as churches, we're voting as individuals about individual lives, and particularly in a state where almost 80% of gay and lesbian homes involve children, we're voting on behalf of children. And for me, that's some serious stuff, right? This is not about, you know, doctrine and religious fundamentalism and what my pastor said and what my mama said and what my daddy said and all these things, right? It's about homes being affected, and particularly young children, right, who are members of gay and lesbian families, right? And that's really key. And so I think, you know, I don't need to say much more. I think that there's a lot to be said in terms of issues of rights. But for now, I'll stop there.
So one of the things I think is important also to talk about, then we will open the phones here. People, Keith and Marcus, going to come to your calls now, is that what you were saying a minute ago, Chanel, about being somebody's neighbor or somebody's coworker or a member of the PTA, is that, you know, when for years in this country growing up, you know, that somebody who was not heterosexual or didn't follow a heterosexual way of living were the other, were somehow swept under the rug or light in the loafers or whatever we wanted to say in the period of the 50s and 60s that people did when they didn't want to be impolite. But the reality was, because it was the other, but the fact I think is important about this also is just the very ordinary lives that people live. This has to do with who somebody falls in love with, not being something other than part of human society. I think that's part that maybe it's beginning to seep in, but is hard for some people to accept.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the thing that
Lisa,
I just want to reinforce is that we're talking about civil legal prerogatives.
Right.
And the many conversations that are being had around this try to cast it in many, many other ways that have absolutely nothing to do with the law that was passed in the Maryland General Assembly. And notwithstanding that people have different views, people have different religious views, they have different, you know, political views, this comes down to one simple concept, equal treatment under the law.
Right.
Let me just read the law and then we'll open the phones, even though we're not just talking about the law itself. We're talking about people's lives here this hour. The Civil Marriage Protection Act, as we'll read on the ballot, is very simple. It establishes that Maryland civil marriage laws allow gay and lesbian couples to obtain a civil marriage license, provided they are not otherwise prohibited from marrying. Protects clergy from having to perform any particular marriage ceremony in violation of their religious beliefs. Affirms that each religious faith has exclusive control over its own theological doctrine regarding who may marry within that faith, and provides that religious organizations and certain related entities are not required to provide goods, services, or benefits to an individual related to the celebration or promotion of marriage in violation of their religious beliefs. I mean, that, I think, is and it kind of that gets argued a lot. Let's see what our listeners are thinking about it. 410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts and questions for our guests, Lisa Polyak and Gita Dean, who have been together for 30 years and are the parents of two daughters.
Right?
I thought that was right. Nicole and Chanel Bastfield, who got married in Washington, D.C., who are expecting their first child and live here in Baltimore. Dr. Jeffrey McCoon, Jr., who is assistant professor in the Department of American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Maryland and a faculty affiliate in the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Studies program. That's UMBC, though, right, Jeffrey?
No, that's College Park.
College Park, sorry. Just want to make sure. Sorry, man. Got it. All right. Make sure I have that right. 410-319-8888. And Keith in Rosedale, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Keith.
My only problem with this whole thing is that you think the couple you have there that's been going through this for 30 years, what's been going on in your life for really 30 years? Let me tell you my main opposition to this whole thing. It's almost like this is being crammed. I mean, literally crammed down the throats of everyone. And you know what? If you choose to be with a woman all your life or something like that, that's fine. But do you think I trust my teenage girls around you as a married couple? No, I don't. And if you think that I'm crazy about that, then I'm just crazy. But believe me, just like there are thousands of people who support you, there are hundreds of millions of people who don't support this. And that's my comment.
All right. Keith, thank you for your comment. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me just say something about the comment. I'll say it. That I think that America is deeply divided on this. And I'm not equating what happened to those of us who participated in the civil rights movement in the South in the early 60s, where I was. But there was a time when the vast majority of white people in the South supported segregation and said, this should be the law of our land. And there were a lot of us who said, a minority of people said, no, it shouldn't be the law of the land. And sometimes you have to have a persistent minority to fight for rights that become then part of the majority. I think America is shifting. I think our eyes and hearts are opening to a different way of thinking about the world. And as Reverend Clay said in the show just the other week, as we had a debate discussion with black pastors on the show around the question of marriage equality, he said he was asked directly the question, "Do you believe in gay marriage?" He said, "Marriage equality." He said, "No, personally, I don't. But it's a civil question, not my question. Maybe another pastor in my church may perform the ceremony, but maybe I won't. That's not the issue." So, I mean, that's what he was kind of being very clear about. And I think that's – you were saying something, Jeffrey, before we go back to the phones? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I really wanted to say something about that comment because I think that, you know, while I'm really cautious about making some type of equivocation between civil rights and LGBT rights, I do think that there is something about what he said that we can take a lesson from, and that is what he structured for us was a deformed gay and lesbian community, one that does not exist, right? The ones that lurk in the shadows. But you can remember just 50 years ago, that same construction was used to talk about black men and some black women, right? And I'm not equivocating the struggle, but what I'm equivocating is a deforming of those two things. And as long as we can actually legitimate that deforming, you know, person, like we can create gay and lesbian people as monsters, just as we created black and Latino people as monsters, if we can continue to do that, the narrative works. But unfortunately, these are human beings. These children are human beings. Right, they're living and loving people, and so it doesn't work. The argument just does not work.
And I think that the one thing I was going to say before we go to break in a few minutes, we are going to get to Julie and Tony and Jay who are calling in. It struck me as you were speaking, Gita, earlier, and it struck me a long time ago with many other friends of mine that we have this idea also about that people who are gay or lesbian don't have monogamous relationships. Mm-hmm. That's part of the mythology that we have in our society. And I think that, you know, I was thinking about as you were speaking about being together 30 years and having two children. 31, excuse me. And having two children, about how that is that kind of popular culture mythology about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, frankly, although I, you know, I'm sympathetic to Keith's concerns. I mean, he was even taking a step further. He was taking it to pedophilia, mm-hmm. which is something that people have historically conflated on gay and lesbian people, is that they're somehow child predators, which, of course, we know is patently false. It's always been false. But to the extent that that's where people are in their understanding of what it means to be gay and lesbian, I can understand why it would seem fearful. But I mean, science and the law have shown us differently that gay and lesbian people are just like everybody else.
410. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
And that the majority of predators, child predators, are not gay and lesbian people. So then, should we revoke all the heterosexual marriage licenses? I mean, really? So, I mean, ultimately, by his determination, he is accepting that we might give license to the governor to just say tomorrow, all heterosexual people must give their licenses back, right? And so the reality is that that is not what we're asking for, and we're not even asking for that. We're asking for access to rights. We're asking for opportunities. We're asking for equal protection under the law. I love that, and that's what we're asking for. And I just think that he's misled in terms of thinking about that. I think we have to kind of call truth, actually speak truth to power, and that in some ways, you know, we have to say that was actually a really misshaping of who LGBT people are in mass.
We're going to have a very brief break and come back. Our next caller up is Julie, and then code J 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Marriage Equality Act will be on the ballot, Civil Marriage Protection Act, it is called. And as I said, we've had many debates and discussions over the last 20 years in the show on this issue. And a lot of debates and discussion in the last legislative session and leading up to this referendum. But once again, we thought that it would be important just to hear the voices of people whose lives would be deeply affected by this ballot measure. We are joined here by Lisa Poliak and Gita Dean. They have been together for 31 years. They have two children. Lisa is a supervisory environmental engineer at the U.S. Army Institute of Public Health. Gita Dean is a college learning specialist at Goucher College. Chanel and Nicole Bastfield, I didn't have your jobs done here. I would say the same thing. I apologize. We're married in Washington, D.C.,
yes.
And are expecting their first child in March.
Yes.
And Dr. Jeffrey McCoon, Jr., is assistant professor in the Departments of American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Maryland College Park and a faculty affiliate in the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Studies program. The number here is 410-319-8888. And Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, welcome.
Good. I have two quick comments. The first one is, the sin is that we have to vote on civil rights, and you simply did not vote on civil rights. The second one is, I recall 25, 30 years ago, and the straight community was up in arms saying that the homosexuals were too promiscuous, and now they want to get married, and they're still up in arms. And my third comment is actually a question. I work for Catholic Charities, so how does this law affect my employer? Do they have to recognize married couples? Because it says that the church doesn't have to. So that's my comment.
Good Thanks. Question. Lisa, do you know the answer to that question?
Well, I think... private employers are able to make their own policies within their companies. But, I mean, the governor has said for state agencies, that municipal organizations, that they will recognize marriage licenses that are entered into lawfully both within the state and out of state.
So but what does that mean? If this passes and you are working for a private company, does that mean the insurance has to cover you in the state of Maryland as a married couple?
No.
It just means that you have the rights of a married couple, so you wouldn't go through what you went through, Gita, not being able to be with your daughter.
Right. I think it's only in state government that you get insurance and other benefits, but I don't think private insurers have to recognize and offer benefits. But I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, I think that's why I think it's the case. So I just want to be, yeah. Mm-hmm. Back to those, unless someone else has something to add to that. 410-319-8888. Jay, you're on the air.
I'm taking my call. I think part of the issue with this question is similar to what happened with civil rights, is that it's always the polar ends of the issue that get on TV and are most represented. It's either all the way positive, all the way negative, all the way vitriolic, or all the way in support of. My question to the panel is, do you think that there will be, because this is such a divisive issue and wrongly so, do you think that there will be any reprisal from people who oppose it? In other words, like clergy just outright saying, you can't come to church, we won't marry you. Do you think there will be, heaven forbid, violence, anything? I'm just concerned for brothers and sisters who being courageous and standing up for this, and any kind of reprisal coming as a result. And I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you so much. What were you shaking your head, Nicole?
Well, I was shaking my head as far as, you know, them saying you can't come and worship here anymore. Or that's the way I heard the question. And it might be out of place for me to say, but there have been gay and lesbian members in churches for ages. And to my knowledge, a lot of times the people in the church know they might not talk about it, but they've never turned down tithes. So with that being saying, I don't think they're going to say, you know, you're a tithing member, you can't come anymore. But I could be wrong. You know, that's just what I got from it, and that's why I was shaking my head.
Jeff, you were about to say something?
I do think that they will be challenging, right, who's going to be able to marry. However, I have to say they already have the right to deny marriages of same-sex couples, right? Churches will not lose that right. And so this is the type of I call it dark humor, but it's not really dark humor. But it's the type of information that pastors are passing down to their congregants, that somehow churches are now going to be forced to have to marry same-sex couples. I go to a church, a United Church of Christ church, that is an open and affirming church, the Community Church of Washington, D.C. That church does absolutely affirms gay and lesbian couples and will marry them. There are churches all over the Maryland, D.C., and Virginia area, right, that will, in fact, marry same-sex couples. You don't have to worry about your church doing so, but what you do need to worry about are the children in your classroom, the neighbors next door, all these gay and lesbian couples that are not going to have access to hold the hands of their partners as they're sick, not going to have access to have the care for their children, health care that they need, have the health care for their partners. That is just unjust. We live in America. And so at the end of the day, pastors can preach and pimp the tithes all they want and talk about gay and lesbians not being Christ-like individuals, but the reality is that Christ and the Bible actually instructs us to follow the law of the land. And the law of the land is going to say, and actually already says, that gay and lesbian couples are recognized, and therefore we should follow the law of the land. And you can follow, and you still have the right to follow your moral compass and code not to marry inside of your church. So I think that there's ways to really think about this in some real sophisticated and compassionate ways, because that's what Christ came to do, right? It's to bring compassion in the world. And unfortunately, the churches that he's talking about that are going to be in uproar, they're already in uproar.
It's also clear that no church, synagogue, mosque, temple will be forced to perform marriages with anybody they don't want. There are churches now that will not perform interfaith marriages. Mm-hmm. Synagogues will not perform interfaith mm-hmm. marriages. Mosques that will not perform interfaith marriages. No one can force them to do that. No one can force anybody to mm-hmm. perform a marriage with same-sex couples if they feel it's not within their doctrine. So that's something that's very clear. This is talking about a civil law.
Right. And just to maybe put a cross the T or dot the I. I mean, really, getting married is supposed to be one of the happiest days of your life.
Yes.
Would anybody go to a religious organization and ask them to be married if they really didn't want to do it?
Right.
I mean, it just, you know, you have to look at it from all perspectives. But there's no uncertainty. Nothing will change after November 6th. Religious clergy do not have to perform any kind of a marriage, officiate any kind of a marriage with which they don't agree.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let us now go to Mac. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Mac.
First of all, thank you all for taking my call. You all keep saying it's a civil issue. When you're talking civil, you're talking social. This is not a civil issue. This is a moral issue. That's the part that the gay, lesbian, homosexual community doesn't want to deal with, because if you want to talk biblically based and you want to talk about the Constitution, our government is rooted and founded on biblical principles. You can't separate the two. And as far as the church, separation of church and state, that argument goes against the state not having the authority to regulate the religious acts of society. This to do with separation of church and state. You are arguing from a civil social issue. And as far as rights, when the law is involved, the rights are on the side of the people who already have the rights. Now, you can always tell from my tone, I'm not for support of homosexual marriage. I'm not in support of question six. And you're answering questions that nobody's asking. It's not about the clergy having the ability to marry. That's not the issue. It's not about whether or not you're a good citizen, whether you vote, whether you work, whether you go to... Those are whole total separate issues. It's about what's morally correct. And when you talk about the Constitution, it's steeped in biblical truth, and the word is clear. Homosexuals have no right to marry.
Okay, so let me just say in response, that I hear what you're saying, and there's a lot of deep feelings on this issue, though... As a historian myself, there is nothing in the founding fathers and what they said in our Constitution that makes this a religious nation. They were actually saying the opposite from the very beginning. This was not founded on biblical principles. This was founded on principles written by Burke and others, principles that was found in the Iroquois Nation that helped make our Constitution. That had nothing to do with religion at all. And as a matter of fact, it was the Baptist Church who led that fight in America, to make sure that no religion could have its way. And then we also have to discuss whose moral principles we're talking about. We're talking about, and we had our pastors on here last week. Those four pastors of four major black churches in our community had very different visions of what that moral question meant. So that's that. So it is a civil question, because in religion in this country, you can be married in any church or synagogue or mosque or temple you want. But until you sign that civil document by the government, you're not married.
Exactly.
So it is a civil document, not a religious document. So,
it's founded on biblical truth. And if you all you have to do is go back to the book of Judges and find out why the original Judges came into play. That was for civil government. Civil government keeps structuring.
Our government is not defined by the New Testament or the Old Testament.
Exactly.
So I appreciate you being part of the show, though. I went all points of view on the air here. You were about to say something, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I think that, this is becoming a more volatile issue for people, because it is really about forgetting the truth of our history, right? And so I love the fact that you brought up the point that, this country actually is not built, on Christian principles, so to speak, right? I think that's really important. But I think the other point that's really important is that people have to forget to read the Bible in order to understand that marriages are not, in the Bible, were not marriages of today, right? So when you're talking about marriages historically in the Bible, those marriages were marriages that were built on the idea that women were slaves, right? And so, if we're going to, fast forward into the 21st century— we can't be using that historic view of marriage in order to validate our own. So he's already, forgotten that history. And in order to make the point that folks want to make against same-sex marriages and to really call it a moral issue, right, they have to forget a certain amount of facts. And my thing is, I want us to remember the facts and actually to be willing and able and active in a process of being able to imagine the world differently than the one we were given, right? And that's really what it's about. Can we imagine the world differently than the one that our parents lived in, our grandparents lived in, or let's even go back to the ones that our ancestors lived in? If we want to imagine the world differently, then we have to make that world happen. And part of that is voting for question six.
And let me just say, let me go back to our guest here before we go back to the phones. And I was doing some thinking and looking at my notes from the other night. And, when we talk about God in our country, and this country is a very religious nation, but even when presidents were sworn to office, no president said, "So help me God," until 1881. It was never in part of the swearing-in ceremony. God was very separate. There was a great Baptist minister, John Leland, during the American Revolution, who led the fight for universal freedom and was a very religious man, but who said, the government cannot tell us who we are. We're a nation of pagans. He even said Mohammedans, Jews, and Christians. So it's been a battle around America for a long time about who we are. And that's part of the fight of defining ourselves. I just wanted, before we go back to the phones, I want you all to talk about, in very clear terms, how it would change your lives emotionally and other ways if this passed. Not if it failed, but if it passed.
I think for myself, it would change our lives because we would not feel like we always had to justify our family. We would not feel like we always had to present our best selves. We could just live. For Nicole and I, as she stated before, you know, even though my name is going to go on our kid's birth certificate and all of the expenses that come with trying to conceive, we have to take extra steps to protect our family by doing a second parent adoption. So all these little loopholes that gays and lesbians have to go through just to get the simple protections of heterosexual couples, this law passing would mean that we no longer have to be in fear that if we go mm-hmm. on vacation and, God forbid, an accident happens and Nicole's hurt or the baby's hurt, we don't have to feel like, okay, do we have our papers in order? You know, we don't want to have to feel that. So it would change our lives because it would give us the security of knowing that we are protected, and that's all we want.
Do other one you want to add something before we move on?
Well, I mean,
Lisa Poliak.
There's no uncertainty that, I mean, in the state of Maryland, there's over 400 rights and prerogatives and protections that come to families that have a civil marriage license that unite them, and we are, you know, eager and hopeful to have all those protections for our family. But I think at this point for us, the thing that is most important is just the dignity to be able to say that, like every other family on the block, we are a married family. And I see that most critically through the eyes of my girls, who, you know, at the beginning of this journey were horrified to find out that we weren't married and that we had to go to the court and then to the legislature to ask that we allowed to be married. I mean, sort of this idea of having to ask, and then further now having people vote on whether or not our family is worthy of those legal protections is fairly demeaning. And I look forward to the day when, at least from their perspective, that their family is just the same as every other married family.
Let's return to the phones at 410-319-8888, and we will go to JT. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I am a heterosexual. I do not agree with question six. I am voting against it. My question actually is, because that is my perspective, because I feel that it is my right to feel that way, why do I have to defend myself against it? I feel like in this journey, because I don't consider it a fight, I consider it a journey in regards to same-sex marriage, that those of us, I have been married for 15 years, 5 children.
Mm-hmm.
I do not understand why I have to defend myself. It seems that there is much anger that's often displaced on the church or on those of us who disagree with it. I think that we have a right to feel that way. I don't understand why we have to defend it. Just as those who participate feel that they have a right to do what they want, I don't understand why we don't have a right to have an opinion on the same.
Why don't you think you have a right to have an opinion? I mean, you do have a right to have an opinion.
Just as I've heard a lot of people say what they feel like the church will do.
Yeah.
What they feel like pastors would do, say what they feel like is their opinion of what they think the church would do. I hear things like they want our tithes. I hear things like they won't marry us. I hear things like they'll tell us to get out. I've been in the church for 25 years, and I've never heard a pastor tell a gay or lesbian person to get out. As a matter of fact, we want them to come in. We want them to be a part of what is going on in our church because we want to be a light. And we want them to see us in a positive way.
We have no hate for them. I'm speaking for my church and for those that I've grown up in the church around. We don't have hatred towards them. We don't judge them. We don't have a right to. Judgment comes from our God. And I feel like because I am in my opinion and I have a right to vote as my opinion stands, right. I'm in constant trying to explain and defend myself in an area that really I don't have anything to do with. I don't want anything to do with it.
So, ask you a question.
It's your business. Just like my marriage and what goes on in my marriage is my business.
Oh, so this, let me let some of our guests respond. I think nobody's going to disagree with you about that.
Can I ask
you a question?
What? I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, I'm here.
A question.
Go ahead.
I feel privileged as a married woman.
Jeffrey?
The question, am I privileged?
I'm asking you, do you feel that it's a privilege to be married?
I feel that it is an honor to be married.
A privilege.
Let's not get into semantics here. This is not taking us anywhere. So
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm willing to answer the question. The word privilege, from my perspective, of the definition of privilege means that I have a right to get married. Is that what you're saying?
No, that you're entitled to rights that other folks who love each other are not entitled to. Do you feel that's true?
Well, that's another point. I don't think that you should not have rights to have insurance or have rights to have a union. I don't think that you should not have rights to have that. What I don't think is that we should change the definition of marriage. I believe that the definition is clear. It is between a man and a woman. I believe that you should have a definition of what your union is, because regardless of what everybody wants to say, it is a difference between the two. But when you use words like civil, I wake up in the morning and I look in the mirror and I'm black. There's no getting around it. But you won't be able to tell unless I open up my mouth and I say so that I'm homosexual or lesbian. So I kind of get offended when you try and place it in the same places.
Okay, JT, I'll answer questions because we have a lot of callers who want to get in the show, and I got to get a lot of the folks get in as well. I appreciate you being part of the show. But I think that there's nobody on this panel who would disagree that you and everybody else have a right to view it the way they want to, and clearly on Election Day, people have a right to push whatever button they're going to push. Let's try to get another caller in here. Let's go to Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Cheryl.
Thank you for taking my call. I am actually neighbors with Gita and Lisa, and I have a funny story to tell you. I respect everyone's opinion on this issue, and I'm heterosexual, married with two children. One day my daughter came to me and she said, you know, Mom, Maya and Davy are so lucky. I said, why is that? Because they have two mommies. And you know what? The man that was on the phone and made the comment that he would never want his two teenage children to be around a homosexual couple is so clearly missing it. I would entrust my children any time with Gita and Lisa. They are the most devoted, respectful family, and they would love my children like I love my children. So when people out there make a comment against homosexuals that want this right, they need to get their facts straight, and they need to understand that these are people that deserve respect and the dignity that they deserve, because this man clearly does not know what he is talking about when he makes these comments about these families that want the same rights that I have day in and day out. And I'd be happy to, I'm a Catholic, I'd be happy to talk to anyone about it, because I just think all these families deserve the dignity and respect that I get every day because I'm a heterosexual. So I just want to say I'm 4-6 and I'm voting for it.
Thank you, Cheryl.
My call.
Thank you, Cheryl. Jacqueline Robarge wrote in. She said Catholic charities receive state and city funding to provide social services. They should be required to follow laws that govern civil society, including recognizing gay marriage in terms of benefits and who they serve. Well, I'm sure what will happen after this vote, if it will, that will be one of the discussions people will have. But, Jacqueline, thanks for your thoughts. And I think we'll leave that discussion for another day and bring that on the airways and see where that goes. 4103, let's, anybody have a comment before we move on to another caller? Okay. 410-319-8888. Tony, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Hi, ladies. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. For those people who are really passionate about voting against question six, they need to consider that they are contributing towards question six by the way they invest in their 401k plans. Their 401k plans are investing money in things that they don't necessarily agree with. So how do they square that with their opposition to question six?
Good question. I don't know. I don't quite know the answer to that. Well, that's a good question, Tony. I don't know. I think that I think that the question six, I think for me, the reason we're doing the show we are today and why we've covered this for the last 20 years and with the intensity we have is because of it being a human rights issue. And I've never shied away from what I think about it, though I try to keep a very open show in terms of the dialogue we have with people from across the spectrum of feelings. But clearly I have a point of view, and one that, you know, I was thinking about this today. Somebody said, how can you on the radio openly espouse your support for marriage equality? And my response always is that, you know, when I was a young man and getting arrested down south and here in Maryland in civil rights, what I've done if I had a radio show? Well, I certainly wouldn't have said that I think that segregation is right and I'm going to take a neutral position. And some things you just can't take a neutral position. You have to stand up and say what you believe, but allow people to have a conversation and bring all their points of view to the airways in a respectful way. That's just to respond to that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Shanice.
I just wanted to add that when I have dialogue with individuals, and I dialogue all the time with people who don't support question six, but the one thing that I use in my conversation with them is the same scriptures that they use back in the day to condone slavery, the same scriptures that they use once upon a time as to why the races shouldn't mix, you know, are the same scriptures that that people are trying to use to justify why we shouldn't get married. And it's like, you know, we are human beings. You know, we have the right to love, to be committed, to want to solidify our union with marriage. I don't think that those individuals ever answered my question as to, you know, what do you think that scripture was used to justify why races shouldn't mix? They will not address that. So for me and my family, it all comes down to, you know, we're here, you know, we're productive members of our society, and we want the dignity, the respect that are afforded to any other couple.
I think that was well put, and I don't know what else we can say. I actually have a minute left to the end of our program, and I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Dr. Jeffrey McCune, Jr., thank you for joining us today. Look forward to meeting you in the studio here one day soon.
Thank you.
Nicole and Chanel Bastfield, thank you. Good to meet both of you, and thank you for coming in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Lisa Polyak and Gita Dean, good to have you in the studio once again.
Thanks,
good
Mark.
To see you both.
Thanks, Mark.
And whatever you feel and believe, you need to vote on Tuesday and vote on question six. All I can say is that I hope that when this is over, that I can raise a toast of champagne at your wedding.
Thank you, Mark. We hope so too.
So we're gonna about to start a conversation on Beyond the Spin, our new national program. We have folks from across the United States talking about their communities in this election, what they're facing in their communities, from Colorado to Wisconsin to California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado. You'll hear that part of our new program with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. on the way out to that conversation, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank, and it belongs to you. www.mecu.com, your credit union's website. We'll be right back. Don't go away.